The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
Good morning and welcome to Analyze This with Neville James. I'm Emil Henderson III and I'm sitting in for Neville this week. I just wanted to make sure that I said good morning to all of you and all of you who are new listeners. Welcome for the first time, and those of you who have been here and been here with me for the last week and 2 days, thank you for coming back. I wanted to start off the show first by simply discussing something that weighed on me yesterday. Yesterday I had a show about vaccine hesitancy, primarily about those who have been vaccinated and those who are hesitant about being vaccinated. And it was my intent to be able to have information put out so that those who are hesitant about being vaccinated would rethink that, and hopefully would feel more comfortable about becoming vaccinated. I have been very vocal that I am fully vaccinated and I support the vaccine. And it is my hope that everyone would want to be vaccinated. But I also recognize that vaccinations or being vaccinated is a personal choice. And it is something that only you as a person can decide if you want to do so. And if you decide that it's something that you're not wanting to do, or it is you're hesitant about it, I would want you to make that final decision based on actual information about the vaccine that is accurate, not information that comes to you through the terminologies of misinformation or disinformation. And it was my hope yesterday that we would have that conversation. And while there were some areas of information that came out that I thought were helpful, when I left yesterday, the studio yesterday, I just didn't feel that what I intended and what I hoped would come from that discourse came from that discourse. When I decided that I was going to take the vaccine, I spoke to my primary care physician. I asked all the questions I needed to ask. I have relatives who are in the medical field. I asked them about it. I had friends who were medical doctors. I asked them about it. My research wasn't me going online for somebody to tell me or to review any kind of sites that spoke about the vaccine or about COVID. I went to those individuals who studied, who are experts in the field, who are medical experts, because I am not a doctor. And after discussing it with them, I felt comfortable that it was safe for me to take the vaccine. I also recognize that there are many among us who don't sit in the place that I sit, who don't have primary care physicians, who don't have relatives or friends who are doctors, some who haven't seen a doctor in decades and don't. And then there are those who we all know who are in the territory illegally and are afraid to go anywhere near a government entity out of fear of what may happen to them. And so they just don't do it. I recognize that those people exist, and that's why I wanted to have a raw, honest discussion for the vaccine and those who are hesitant about it. But I also wanted to make clear that while we look at the individuals I just spoke about as being hesitant, there are also those who are highly educated, who have a whole lot of money, who can afford all the doctors they want, and they too are hesitant or not vaccinated and have no intentions of being vaccinated. And so we have to figure out how to reach those people in the places where they are. And while I appreciate all that has been done so far, I do believe that discussion, the raw discussion about the things we may not want to talk about, or I should say, and the raw discussions about helping people to see that the vaccine is in fact safe and that you can go out and do it, so we can get to a place where we can receive some kind of normalcy outside of this pandemic, we have to get to that point. When I agreed to sit in for Neville, what I always thought about in my mind is that I wanted to make sure that we have discussions where people can learn and where people can feel as if they learned a little bit more than before, and where we can have the discussions in a respectful manner, and where we can have discussions where we don't only talk about what the problems are, but where we can have solutions about them. And so today, at the end of the show yesterday, Dr. Ann Treasure called in the show and gave some really great nuggets. And I received a lot of texts and calls yesterday saying that, you know, the show ended too quickly. Why did it end so quickly with Dr. Treasure? And I felt it was important for me to continue the discussion for this morning hour at 8 o'clock. And so I invited Dr. Treasure to come back. And I invited her to come back so that we can have another conversation about it. And hopefully this conversation will reach where I hoped that we would have reached yesterday. And so, Dr. Treasure, good morning.
Good morning.
And thank you for agreeing to come on today. It was very short notice, and I appreciate the fact that you took the time to make yourself available to come today so we can have this discussion about the vaccines.
Yeah, my pleasure. It really takes several different kinds of messengers and different approaches to the message. So it's all of us, the collective message.
Absolutely.
That will work to answer questions and to remove and reduce hesitancy and increase acceptance of vaccinations in general and the COVID vaccines in particular.
Absolutely. Now, one of the issues and one of the problems that I see is that the disinformation that has been out there, starting with the pandemic or the virus as a hoax, right?
Correct.
Has permeated this entire pandemic because it's been allowed to sit there unchecked for quite some time, right? But I don't believe that it is impossible to crack through that and reach to some people.
Correct.
Right? And so what I wanted to know is we do have a lot of disinformation out there. People say a lot of things about, you know, when you take the vaccine, you're going to have, you know, DNA restructuring and the government is going to control you and they're putting chips in your body. Those are the extremes of the disinformation. And those people I perceive are people who, no matter what you say, they're just not going to do it. And so today I want to really focus on those who are hesitant because they genuinely have a concern, whether it be the fact that they have pre-existing conditions, mm-hmm. Or they feel that the vaccines haven't been tested long enough, mm-hmm. Or whether they received a side effect or they know someone who's gotten a side effect, so that has kind of scared them into coming into it. And actually, whether or not they have the basic scientific information that the medical community should be putting out to them. And so I wanted to discuss a little bit about that and some of the myths that we can debunk today, and encourage those who are hesitant about it to get them to come in and take the vaccine. I really wish that people would do so, but I understand their hesitancy, and I want to respect their hesitancy, but I want to have the discussion with them to see if I can convince them, to let them know I hear you, and I hope that the medical community can say to them, I hear you, and so let me help you through this process. So Dr. Treasure, tell us a little bit about your knowledge and your understanding of this vaccine.
Well, it's more than one vaccine, and in fact, There were over 100 vaccinations for COVID-19, or actually its really technical name is SARS-CoV-2.
Okay.
So we've had a SARS-CoV before.
Okay.
And once the virus was identified and we noticed that there basically had become a pandemic, several companies around the world began trying to produce a vaccine, and different kinds of vaccine. Like some were live vaccines, some were protein vaccines, some were dead vaccines. All of the kinds of vaccines that we are already accustomed to, there was a race to production. Only 59 were what we would call serious or credible, well-funded, you know, with good scientific background, that were likely to be considered seriously. Of those, 5 were discontinued or rejected, and the other 54 are in some phase of either clinical testing or in actual use. So around the world, 8 major ones, and in the United States, 3, those same 3 in Europe, along with the AstraZeneca. So we have Moderna, Pfizer, and the Johnson & Johnson, which is similar to the AstraZeneca, and those are in use in the United States. So it's a lot of vaccines. And the fact that there are 54 should tell you that they're not just passed.
Right.
They all have to go through rigorous development and initial testing. And what that looks like for those who wonder about, you know, things coming too quickly. Well, first of all, just in the history of mRNA vaccines in Moderna and Pfizer, those vaccines have been around for decades. In fact, most of the military have had what is known as an anthrax vaccine.
Okay.
And those are patterned off of the mRNA. We also used mRNA vaccines for the original SARS. So it should not, and that SARS came out first in 2002.
2000.
Yes. So it shouldn't be, you know, once you know that and you realize that they had started a SARS vaccine before, it's only to retool the current one to make it specific to this particular variant.
So that everybody understands that, even myself to understand that, the mRNA vaccine, or what they were doing for
SARS-CoV-2,
uh-huh, right, that came out in 2002, mm-hmm, right?
That's original SARS.
Original SARS, right? That's 19 years ago, mm-hmm, right? And so when we come now to COVID-19, mm-hmm, right, then we're talking about the fact that all they simply did was go back to what they did in 2002 and like upgraded it.
Basically.
So it's like getting an iPhone 12 it's after exactly. You had an iPhone 11
or iPhone 8. Or my iPhone 3.
Or iPhone 3.
And
right?
the downloads from my iPhone 3, I used to have to download a movie overnight.
Right.
Currently, we don't. So I'm not really sure why we think things should go so slowly.
Is it possible that people just didn't make the correlation?
They didn't.
Between COVID-19 and SARS-CoV-1?
And that, again, like I always said with the Democrats, is the poor messaging. So what they should have done is they should have labeled it SARS-2. Mm-hmm. And keep making reference to the original SARS, which they now call SARS-1. So it is the same old SARS that we've had before. And we've actually had coronaviruses through the history of mankind. We've just never had one virulent enough until SARS-1 and SARS-CoV-2. So they should have called it SARS-CoV-2.
So coronavirus is not a virus that is novel.
It's not. The general category right. is not new to us.
Right.
But this particular strain is.
So correct. Is it? Now, I don't want to minimize COVID-19, but let's look at it in the context of the flu, mm-hmm, right? So every year we do a flu shot, right? Do we do the flu shot because every year there's somewhat of a new strain and you're trying to figure it out, so you add a new to kind of combat what the new strain is?
Correct. And so, yeah, we do change. And sometimes it goes back to maybe a strain that we had in 1997, for example.
Okay.
So we usually do combinations of strains and we try to predict it. And we make those flu vaccines with 2 months' notice.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so with now COVID-19, based on your explanation, which I just think is so helpful, and I thank you for saying that, is that the vaccine that we brought out had at least a foundation 17 years ago, or actually, 19 years ago, even longer.
Or decades ago, when you talk about the category of messenger RNA vaccines in general.
Okay.
And then also Zika, Ebola, all of those we actually started using, making vaccines, but we were able through public health measures, in the case of Zika and Ebola, to kind of keep them contained. They never reached a pandemic level.
Right. And so that's another issue. together, meaning the initial response of the country to COVID-19, where, as we know, they were dismantled. The group that was supposed to address these kind of infectious diseases and pandemics was actually disbanded, if the word is what I want to use.
Yeah, they were dismantled.
And so their response to it from the inception, where we could have contained it and not even be to the place we are today, wasn't there.
Correct.
And so, unfortunately, we are in this place. But, you know, I think it was important for us to bring out the fact, and I thank you for bringing it up, the fact that the SARS-1 was in 2002, and what simply happened as we came into COVID-19 is the fact that you just kind of went back and saw what was happening there, and you just kind of restructured and shifted around to meet the needs of what COVID-19 was, so that when we talk about the vaccine, don't look at it in the context of it was hurriedly done. Look at it in the context that you have decades of research prior that also helps you to get to the point of where we are now. Now, with that backdrop, why do we then have to go through the clinical trials and those different things?
Yeah, right. So we have to go through clinical trials with any new medicine or any new vaccine. And some of the elements of the clinical trial are not just how the medicine or the vaccine behaves over time, but numbers, so you get good statistical correlation and you don't simply rely on coincidence. So in generally speaking, you may do animal testing, which you may call phase zero. Mm-hmm. And then you do phase one, which is usually, is it safe? So like when they were making the vaccines for, say, polio, they test a few, or chickenpox. So you may test 10 people or 100 people. And the first thing you look at is, does anybody die? Nobody die? Nobody get sick? Right. Okay. Well, now let's test 1,000 people. And these are all volunteers, by the way. Mm-hmm. You test them. Everybody's fine. Nobody dies. And you can halt testing. If the first three people that you give an injection to, you know, fully pass out of 10, you probably will halt. Right. And just like I mentioned before, some vaccines were totally halted. Once you've established that people don't die and you start to get early statistics, you graduate to phase two. And what phase two does is, how much do I need to evoke the response, either a cure or resistance or immunity, to where you can measure the immunity. And so you may take three groups. One gets one milliliter, next group gets 2 milliliters, and the next group gets 3. Number one, they don't respond adequately. But 2 and 3 respond. But if 2 and 3 respond, then the correct dose is 2. So you want to know what is the smallest dose that I can give safely to achieve the desired effect. And so now that you've passed phase two, so you know it's safe, you know how much to give. And lastly, you now collect hundreds of thousands of people, volunteers, you give it to them and see who gets sick and who doesn't.
And that's where you test the safety now of the efficacy of...
You've already tested the safety.
Okay.
The last thing you need to know, it's safe to give, does it work? And so you need the big numbers. And that's what they did all of last year, is test 170,000 people, half of whom got the real thing and half of whom got the blank, to see who got COVID and who didn't.
Awesome. All right, Dr. Treasure, thank you. We will be back in 2 minutes to continue the conversation.
Hurricane season, it's especially important to not only prepare your home, but your personal health too. You can avoid serious illness during unpredictable weather conditions by getting the COVID-19 vaccine. Sheltering at home with extended family or staying in a hurricane shelter puts you at risk for COVID-19 if you haven't been vaccinated. Call 340-777-8227 or visit COVID19USVI.com/vaccines to schedule an appointment. Build a kit with essential items. Be sure to refill your prescription medications. Plan your evacuation route. Take an inventory of your personal property. Review your insurance policies. Take steps to protect your home. Wear a mask. Wash your hands frequently with soap and water. Maintain physical distance from others. Stay home when possible. And stay safe. For more information, please visit vi.gov, COVID19USVI.com, and USVIUpdate.com. This message has been brought to you by the Virgin Islands Department of Health.
Welcome to Banking for Your Business. At Bank of St. Croix, we make it easy to mind your business. We offer checking and savings accounts with no hoops or hassles. Our mobile apps provide you access to your business accounts on the go, and our merchant card services allow you to accept credit and debit payments anywhere, anytime. Plus, with our easy-to-use online banking platform, our bank is always open. We invite you to come see the difference at Bank of St. Croix.
Tom has been a teacher for over 40 years. One day, I think one of the students had asked the question and he didn't remember the answer. And I also noticed that he was letting his class out earlier than they were supposed to let out. I was really starting to worry.
Levi and I talked about how it would change our lives, but he was there beside me.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Good morning and welcome back to Analyze This. Today we have on the show with us Dr. Anne Treasure, and we're discussing the vaccines and hesitancy, and hopefully we're able to address some of the concerns for those who are hesitant about the vaccine, taking the vaccine, that they may be encouraged to make that decision to do that, so we can get to a place like Puerto Rico, where they are now over 70% of their residents are fully vaccinated. And so we would like to get there. But before I do that, one quick note, Governor Brian will be holding his weekly briefing today, Tuesday, October 26th at 2 p.m. Atlantic Standard Time, which is 2 p.m. our time. And he will be doing it remotely from Denver. Governor Brian, who is accompanying a delegation from the 34th Legislature of the Virgin Islands on their fact-finding trip to Denver, Colorado, about the cannabis industry. So please take a listen. I know he usually does those on Mondays, but he's doing it today, 2 p.m., remotely from Denver. So tune into that. All right. So yes, Dr. Treasure, before we continue, I just mentioned the fact that I would hope that we could get to that place where we have more than 70% of our population vaccinated. And a story came out from CNN yesterday that spoke about Puerto Rico becoming the most vaccinated place in America. Mm-hmm. Puerto Rico is 90 miles away from us, right? Puerto Rico has about 3.3 million people who live in Puerto Rico, and they have a little over 73% of their population is vaccinated. That's like more than 2.3 million people in Puerto Rico are fully vaccinated. We have about 105,000 people in the Virgin Islands, and we can't get 70,000 people vaccinated. And that's telling. And so it is important for us to maintain these kinds of discussions so that people can be more comfortable and we can get ourselves out of the strictures of this pandemic and keep ourselves moving. So Dr. Treasure, one of the questions that came in yesterday, and for the most part, some of them were answered by the Department of Health, and some were answered directly by you. But since we may have those who may not have listened to the show yesterday, I wanted to just quickly go over some of them with you. And so for you, since of course you're OBGYN, mm-hmm. so I received at least two questions yesterday relative to a female's menstrual cycle and the vaccine, mm-hmm. and whether there is effect on them if they were to take this vaccine. Is there any?
Right. So we have very little data to suggest that there is any significant change to any menstrual cycles, and certainly none to fertility, conception, or to taking the vaccine while pregnant. In fact, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology and the Society for Maternal Fetal Medicine and the World Health Organization, which are the three predominant entities that will make a judgment based on all the data collected by all obstetricians, midwives, gynecologists, is that there is no long-term effect or even any intermediate effect on menstrual cycles. Keep in mind that people have changes in their menstrual cycles who have never been vaccinated. Mm-hmm. A full quarter of my practice is about people who have problems with their menstrual cycle.
Okay.
And I've been doing that for 25 years. They weren't vaccinated against SARS-CoV-2. So people get stuff. It's kind of like saying that, you know, you went to the nursing home and you gave people vaccinations and then four people died. Well, in Sweden, four people die in that nursing home on average every month.
Right.
So you can't say because something happened after an event that it happened because of the event. And so what happens is, especially in someone who was very nervous about taking it, anything that happens afterwards, they tend to attribute to the vaccine. And that's why we do what's called control groups.
Okay.
So that we know it's not a coincidence. In the case of the mRNA vaccines, 100,000 people who are what we call age matched, and 70,000 people got blanks, 100,000 people got vaccine. There's same number of elderly, same number of women, same number of women in the childbearing ages, same number of teenagers. So that when you start to see on one side of the ones who are vaccinated, and they don't know which ones they got. You don't know if you got the blank.
The persons don't know.
It's called a double blind study.
Okay.
The person who's giving the shot doesn't know it, so they don't put their face differently. The person who's receiving the shot doesn't know which one they got. They told all of them to mask, monitor your menstrual cycle, live your lives.
Okay.
They tested how many of, so let's suppose they had 10,000 women in the childbearing years in each group.
Okay.
They looked to see, did you have any changes in your menstrual cycle? Did you get pregnant? Did you have a miscarriage? Did you have difficulty conceiving? And they look at the vaccinated group with the unvaccinated group. Of course, you have infertile people in both groups.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't attribute, oh, I didn't get babies anymore, I didn't get pregnant, to the vaccine, because we now have 10,000 on the other side who had similar rates of infertility, changes in the menstrual cycle, and who got pregnant very easily, vaccinated and unvaccinated.
Okay.
So they're able to say that there is no real difference in each of the groups because we have what's called a control group and a group that has been tested and they don't know.
So the science does not support that the vaccine is causing changes in any woman's menstrual cycle.
Correct.
All right. So that's one for those who may have been concerned or hesitant about the vaccine for that specific purpose. You know, again, I urge you to see a medical doctor who's actually credentialed and talk it over with them some more. But at least today we've learned that there is no medical data that supports, scientific data that supports that the vaccine creates any changes in your menstrual cycle.
And while we're mentioning menstrual cycle, because it talks about fertility, and there's a significant population of women who are terrified of getting the vaccines because they're trying to conceive.
Mm-hmm.
Getting the COVID infection, I want to be clear, not the vaccine, but if you actually catch COVID, we're finding that men are showing up with changes to their reproduction.
Huh.
Men more than women, and we know this. We know this already has happened with mumps.
Okay.
That men who get mumps develop, and you can Google with me, something called mumps orchitis, which is inflammation of the testicles, which can lead to future infertility. We're now seeing that on cadavers of people who died from COVID infection,
mm-hmm.
that they're seeing that there is the vaccine likes certain organs more than others.
Okay.
So it likes lungs,
okay.
predominantly. But it also likes blood vessels and can cause clots. It likes kidneys and it causes kidney failure. And it seems to like something called the ACE2 receptors in male testicles.
Mm.
So men are showing up with inflammation of the testicles, changes in their ability, their hydraulics, if you will,
mm-hmm.
so that their love lives have changed. I don't know how many children are listening to this. And we're finding that the sperm production is drastically reduced in men who have infection. Now, what is frightening. Most people don't immediately know that their reproduction has been affected. Because when your lungs go bad, you know within seconds, I can't breathe.
Right.
It takes you maybe a few days to figure out that your kidneys aren't working like they were before. Because you may start swelling and you're not peeing like usual. But it takes a few days for the fluid to start collecting. It may take years, especially if you're a teenage male or a young male who's not looking to try to conceive. you may find out 5 years or 10 years from now, after you were infected with COVID, that you can't conceive and your sperm count is not normal. So for those who are worried about fertility with the vaccine, it's actually quite the opposite. The vaccine may actually protect the fertility of that couple by protecting the fertility of the male in particular.
And that is because the issue that will affect the fertility is the infection.
The infection.
It's not the vaccine.
Not the vaccine.
And the goal is to, as much as you can, is to prevent the infection and the effect of it.
Correct.
Okay. So that's important.
So the vaccine may preserve fertility.
Right. You'd be surprised how many people are hesitant because of that, and how many men are hesitant because they feel that by taking the vaccine, they somehow become impotent and won't be able to have kids or won't be able to have sex or any of those things that men enjoy. And I think it's an important thing to discuss so they can hear that the vaccine has nothing to do with that. It really is. You should be more concerned about contracting COVID.
Correct.
As opposed to taking the vaccine. And one of the things that we have a problem with men is that, you know, a lot of, especially West Indian men, they don't like going to the doctor.
No.
Right? So they're not trying to go to the doctor to hear anything, see anything, know if anything is wrong at all.
No news is good news.
Right. And so I encourage men, and especially West Indian men, to go see your doctor. It's not a bad thing. Catch things early.
Prevent.
And prevent, correct. But one of the things that we're hopefully have debunked today is that the vaccine is not the enemy, and the vaccine is not something that will cause you to become impotent or infertile or anything of the sort. So,
and you know, there's a larger discussion about that there are forces in the universe who would like to see certain populations be erased,
yes,
or genocide, and
mark of the beast, and those
yes,
kinds of things.
Yes. And that rich people like Bill Gates,
right?
They want people to not be fertile. They want Africans in particular not to have children. I've actually worked in relief areas as a physician in Ghana, mm-hmm. back in the 90s. And I worked polio clinics. And I saw normal children who were born normal, who had been, but for a 50-cent vaccine, who had become completely paralyzed. They won't work, they won't go to school, and they won't marry. Because you have to walk to school. You can't when you have polio. And some of their siblings had died, and they would become pariahs in their villages. That actually acts like a form of genocide. Mm. When people can't marry, or no one will love them,
right?
You've actually taken the human resource and killed it off. So same thing with SARS-CoV. You really want to make sure that people don't just die outright, or that their future fertility is not affected. And the whole conspiracy about, oh, Bill Gates wants to kill people. I think Bill Gates wants people to live so he can sell them his computers. It is not logical that rich people want poor people to die. Because you're not rich if no one is poor.
Right.
You know, you need someone to mow your lawns and cook your food and drive your cars. You really need, you know, in other words, it would be monopoly. If everybody in the world was a billionaire, there'd be no rich and there'd be no poor.
Right.
So billionaires need for people to use their products. Big pharma. People who are dead can't use pharmaceuticals. So big pharma needs people to live. So that's some of the conspiracies matching that address, you know, genocide or the intentions of rich people.
And for which there is no scientific data to support any of those things. No actual factual data.
Absolutely
to support
none.
Any of
In
those
fact,
things.
I went to Africa on the Carnegie Foundation. You know, Carnegie was a billionaire, mm-hmm. and the foundation wanted to provide for the health care of women and children. So they paid for physicians to go to these places and train others to work with others. And what I found was women who were convinced that their children wouldn't die, who their children had gotten vaccines, usually had a family size of four. And it meant that she can now send all of them to school, and all of them will live to become adults. Before, they would have as many children as they could possibly have, because they accepted that because of polio and measles, many of them would die off.
Wow.
And so many of them kept having kids until they themselves hemorrhaged to death in childbirth. So by giving them vaccines, she then had a family size that she could manage, that she actually wanted. She didn't have to go through the pain of losing children, and
her family thrived and prospered.
Wow.
So the vaccines have made women take control of their family size. And someone has spun that into Bill Gates wants people to get vaccines so he can kill off populations.
Yeah.
Or he can stop people's fertility. That.
You know,
it's a terrible spin.
One of the things you mentioned is that we have to try to prevent death.
Yes.
People should not die today by this pandemic, because we have sufficient vaccines and we can follow all of the other safety protocols and the things that we need to do, right? Yesterday, the Department of Health announced the 79th and the 80th death in the territory due to COVID-related death. And it is heartbreaking that in this small community, we have 80 people that have died as a result of something COVID-related, but that the number, I think, as of August, just spiraled out of control since August. We were doing kind of well. Good. You know, I didn't want anybody to die, but the number of death was pretty, numbers of death was pretty low. And we came around July, August, and we just went into a tailspin, and we're now at 80.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether any of those individuals were vaccinated or not. And at this point, the fact that they've passed away is sad enough.
Yeah.
And we have to take the bull by the horn and do something so that we don't have an 81st.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things that you have been sharing with your patients or in the community, I should say, to the people in the community, people who come up to you in the community, about what we can do to ensure that we are keeping not only ourselves safe, but those around us?
Well, we continue to preach the message. And so that's a question that we have now at the Wang Lui Hospital made one of your intake questions. Like, we ask you questions about your health, questions about, you know, the last time you had a pap smear, when the last time you went to a doctor, or any other vaccinations. We now ask everyone what their vaccination status is. And they tell us, if they would like to tell us, what that vaccination status is. And of course, all of that information about vaccinations is what they call HIPAA protected.
Yes.
So there's a privacy law. You only have to reveal that if you wish to.
Right.
And you no one can reveal it on your behalf unless a law provides otherwise.
Right.
So making the assessment and then giving information and answering that person's particular question. For some people, they're not anti-vax. They don't think it's a conspiracy, and they think the vaccines are safe for most. But they think that the vaccine may have an effect on them in particular, either because they have allergies, and that's the most common one question that I've heard, or I have diabetes or high blood pressure. Should I get the vaccine? And we usually answer their specific questions. So for someone who has, for example, the first thing is we tell them, even people who have severe allergies, we found that in the billion people who've been vaccinated with the messenger RNA vaccines, Moderna and Pfizer, no one has died. No one has had a severe enough allergic reaction to die. So we first stress the, and that includes all allergic people. And so we tell them that people like you have been vaccinated with good result. And we also tell them that it's usually the people with pre-existing conditions who need the vaccines more than anyone else.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Treasure. We will be back.
Synergy Fitness and Wellness Center, located in Red Hook on St. Thomas, has been serving the community since 2011 and offers on-site and virtual services, including physical, speech, and occupational therapies, naturopathic medicine, and nutritional counseling. The therapists work with one patient per session, no referral needed, Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturdays from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Synergy Fitness and Wellness, 340-714-2348 or synergyvi.com.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Music can be an incredibly personal experience. A song can inspire you, it can comfort you, it can make you feel understood, it can even take you back to a specific moment in your life. And it all begins with the artist. Join me, Raina Duras, as I get personal through in-depth interviews with your favorite musicians and find out where those songs come from on World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
To protect her home and family in a disaster, Karen was willing to wade through water, mud, and insurance paperwork.
Yeah, I can do this.
You go, Karen! By simply understanding and updating what her insurance covers and doesn't cover now, she'll be better prepared no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
Good morning and welcome back to Analyze This. I'm Emil Henderson III, and I have in studio with me Dr. Anne Treasure, and we're talking about some of the myths and some of the hesitation that individuals may have regarding the vaccine. And so we're having that discussion this morning. And I wanted to ask you a question, Doctor. We previously discussed this issue about disinformation and people with the disinformation and giving some misinformation. They're hampering our ability to get people vaccinated,
yes.
Right? Because people are starting to believe the things that they are reading and what people are in fact saying. And we have a lot of these people who are putting out this information who are not medical doctors, okay? And so just so everybody can understand, would you just tell us what is the difference between a doctor and a medical doctor?
Well, the different kinds of doctorates. So you do have PhDs.
I have one, juris doctorate, but yes. I don't dispense medication.
Yes. Right. And then you have people who are, you know, medical doctors, whether, you know, it's allopathic medicine or you know, osteopathy. And we usually refer to those in the context of giving medical advice as people who are actually licensed.
Okay.
So you have to be a licensed provider. Other providers also give medical advice, what we call allied health providers, mm-hmm. either because they have a collaborative relationship like a nurse practitioner or a midwife, nurse anesthetist, or they have we supervise other licensed providers like physician assistants,
okay.
Even nurses to some extent under the authority of a doctor will give medical advice to patients or you know in the community. So you have to be very specific to see whether or not they're a licensed provider and therefore legally allowed to give medical information.
Okay. And so for those who aren't, right, what is the medical board doing when we have people giving out this kind of advice and giving out advice that they're not, one, a couple things, one, licensed to do, or two, even qualified to do?
Yeah, so it's really more of a prosecutory type thing. I hope I'm not treading on your ground here. but the medical board would verify that that person is not licensed to give medical advice in this territory. And then the powers that be in the Department of Justice would then, at their discretion and with enough, evidence, serve to either give a stay or arrest or, persons who are touting or who are giving medical treatment and advice without the authority, training, and the licensure to do so.
Okay. Because we have, you know, we have in this nation, we have people with this information putting out all these false cures and all these different things. And
right.
It's problematic.
But here's the thing. You actually have some doctors who are unscrupulous. You have terrible people in every profession, every mm-hmm. walk of life. So you might find those 8 physicians, and we think that there are probably about 12 of them, literally about 12, who are primarily responsible for most of the disinformation. And what people will do, they will latch on to one doctor out of almost 1 million physicians in the United States.
Yes.
And they will say, see, I found one who said that the vaccine or the pill or the injection or whatever medication or whatever treatment is not safe. Or you find someone who say, oh, take ivermectin, and they will actually latch on to the one who says take ivermectin instead of the million that say that it's not safe.
Right.
Now, you think about airplanes, for example. People will start to talk about airplanes. Everybody's a doctor, but nobody's a pilot. Mm-hmm. If you have a million pilots who say that the wings should turn up and the flap should turn down when you're taking off, I don't know what they're supposed to do.
Right.
Why would I listen to those eight who tell me, oh, no, the wings should not be? Or don't listen to those other million. Listen to me. And by the way, buy my book.
Right.
So we have to start to listen to what we call what is consensus. Mm-hmm. So what do the 99.9% of anyone in any particular industry say is safe? You need to listen to those people. Now, I get that if you are already afraid, you're going to search for that one doctor that says don't take any COVID-19 vaccine. Mm-hmm. You know, when my sister was ill, I was looking for any case of anyone with metastatic breast cancer to find that one person who somehow survived, and how did they survive. So we tend to look for information that we want to avoid consensus or the raw statistic that told us in our good mind what it is. And we're looking for someone to justify our unreasonable fear
or
to give us hope.
Right. And that is so important, because you are correct that we will have a lot of people who are hesitant, who will seek out a positive response of what they're hesitant about.
Yes.
And use that as a basis to say, I'm not going to do that.
Yes.
That vaccine. Then with that in play, what are we able to do to combat that?
Well, we just have to continue to explain. And when someone says, well, I found a doctor, and patients will come to my office and they come with their phone or a printout and say, see, somebody got the vaccine, and or this doctor says you shouldn't get vaccinated. And I say, okay. And I will sometimes use their example. Like, for example, I might be talking to a reading teacher, and all of them say, I'm going to make up an example, Hooked on Phonics helps 99% of kids. And I said, I can find a teacher who tells us that Hooked on Phonics makes children unlearn to read.
Right.
Who are you going to listen to? So sometimes you need to make an example or an analogy in language that they understand, in something that is real life every day for them.
Yes.
For them to say, I see what you mean, that is absurd.
And part of that, in addition to doing that, part of it is also listening to them.
Yes.
And letting them understand that you hear them. Even if you may not agree with them, and even if you have to say, well, no, that's not quite accurate, but that you hear them. And I think what's been happening too often nationally and in our community as we deal with this pandemic is that we're not hearing the people who are saying, I don't want the vaccine. We are telling them, this is what it is. And if you don't, then you are causing A, B, C, or D. And what it does is it vilifies them, and it creates an us against them situation, as opposed to listening to what they're saying and responding in a way to understand why that person is where they are.
Correct.
Relative to this pandemic and this vaccine, and then trying to have the conversation with them. Because I believe people are more willing to listen to you when they feel that you have listened to them.
Absolutely.
And if you're not listening to them and your response is you just need to get vaccinated, then you have completely removed them from any consciousness of humanity. And they just like, well, then I just won't do it. It doesn't convince them to do it.
Correct. And there's some people for whom that works.
Right.
You know, there's some people that if your pastor tells you to do something, they just absolutely do it.
Yes.
And they totally trust. Or they say, Doc, if you tell me, I'll do it. And they don't have any further questions. But for those people who, despite advice or an edict, who say, no, but I still have questions, then you really have to ask them, what is it about the idea of the vaccines that bothers you? Or what is your question? And what's even more important, and this is something that, I don't know if it's my first background as a school teacher before I did medicine, is you have to speak in the language and at the level of jargon. You may be talking to somebody who, like you, Emil, you're an attorney. But I know you're not a physician. So when you come to my office, even though I know that you have a Juris Doctorate, where you are medically may be where you left high school biology. So I need to speak to you
in
the language that you would, what I would expect for somebody who stopped at 10th grade biology. So I have to use terms that with which you're familiar. I'm not going to talk about phagocytes and splenic destruction. I'm going to really talk about creating antibodies. And even if I have to make an analogy of your body being like the police station, and he needs to see a picture of Mr. Polio, so even though it's a healthy police station, a healthy immune system, you still have to see the culprit to make antibodies to go after it. And many people say, oh, that's a reference that I am comfortable with. Putting out the all points bulletin or getting a description of the suspect is like getting a description of the virus to make antibodies. For most people, they get it because many people don't know, well, why are you trying to give me the virus to don't get the virus? And I have to tell them, well, it's a dead virus or a picture of a dead suspect to then make antibodies so that you're ready for the live one that can harm you.
Yes.
So you really have to not use jargon or use examples that are applicable to your life and your understanding for people to really get it. So you just have to keep changing your approach and trying to listen and not try to sound like you're stupid or just do what I tell you. If that hasn't worked before, then you're someplace else and you do something
else. That's correct. Now, one of the other hesitancies that has come in from some individuals about not taking the vaccine is the fact of, why should I have to take the vaccine when people who are fully vaccinated are still getting it? And the ones who are fully vaccinated, aren't they asymptomatic and they're the ones causing all the rest of us to get sick?
Ah, very, very good question. And so, well, first of all, there's no vaccine that has been perfect. We've never made a perfect vaccine. The ones that we've received as children, mumps, measles, they're in the 80% of effectiveness. But it's because everybody takes it that it protects the ones who are still susceptible.
Right.
So if you imagine two classrooms, right? One with 100 people unvaccinated and one with 100 people fully vaccinated. And you spray both classrooms with COVID. Well, the 100 who are unvaccinated, all 100 will catch COVID. The ones who are unvaccinated, 5 of the 100 will still catch it and 95 won't. And they won't transmit it if they haven't caught it. So of that 5%, because that's right now is the 95% effectiveness, the 5% who catch it do have the possibility to pass it on, although we understand that they don't have as they're not likely to be coughing and therefore less likely to transmit. So most of us are getting sick from the 100 unvaccinated and not the 5 fully vaccinated who are not even coughing the virus against us. So they're what we call the R naught, which is the tendency to transmit, is much, much, much lower.
For those who are fully vaccinated,
who get it. Because the vaccine works mostly in the bloodstream. It's not quite as effective in the what we call the oropharynx or the nose and mouth. And the virus likes to live in noses. It likes nose hairs, if you will. So because it's not a nasal spray vaccine, we tend not to get that specific kind of antibody that lives in mouths and noses, what we call immunoglobulin A. Okay. So if there is a susceptibility, it will be where the nose and mouth is. And of course, there are people who, like Colin Powell,
yes,
who are elderly, have a cancer of the immune system, and taking chemotherapy. And he was male, because remember, males get it a little slightly more than females. So he was very susceptible. So somebody didn't vaccinate and came in contact with him, his wife, or with him, and passed it on. So if everyone had been vaccinated in the U.S., Colin Powell would not have caught COVID.
And he was fully vaccinated?
And he was fully vaccinated.
Yeah.
But remember now, the chemotherapy kills all your police.
Correct. And that's what I wanted to reach out to discuss also quickly because, you know, when Colin Powell died, in no time.
Ah, you see?
You had, see, oh my God, see, yeah. He had it and look how he still died. Yes. That's why we don't need to have it.
Yes.
And so you just said something, you're right. He had other health issues going on with him. And he then, as you just said, if he was taking chemotherapy, it killed off a lot of the protective cells that he would have needed to fight off the vaccine.
Correct.
And
the infection.
Someone came in.
Absolutely. And then and you look at the logic. One person's safety mechanism failed, so safety mechanism should not be used. That's like saying, oh, see somebody dead in a car crash and had a seatbelt. Nobody shouldn't wear any seatbelts.
Yeah.
Seatbelts aren't effective. Never mind that. the 99 crashes before, people walked out alive or had minor injuries because they had been wearing a belt. And we know the car crashes. The ones who were belted lived, and the ones who were in the back unbelted died.
Yeah.
It's clear that seatbelts save life or minimize injuries.
Yes.
Okay? So to say that somebody's seatbelt failed, I'm not understanding why that logic. And so when people tell me, oh, well, you get it, if you get a vaccine, you can still get it, so why get it? And then when I bring up the seatbelt issue, or I bring up for young people the condom issue. Mm-hmm. Yeah, people have gotten pregnant using condoms or caught a disease. But the vast majority, it's prevented. So just, and when I say it, they say, oh, so it decreases your chances. And if everybody uses condoms, probably wouldn't even have hardly diseases anymore.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so, yeah. So you just bring up other examples and they say, yes. So still a good reason. Bring up something that they can relate to.
That they can relate to. And that's what's important, because as long as they're able to relate to the importance of having that vaccine, even if they're hesitant, they're willing to listen to what the medical community is saying to them. And they're more likely to say, you know what? Okay, let me go ahead and do it. Or if you connect it to the fact that, hey, you have a, I don't want them to wait until either they get sick and now they're in the hospital. And then the first thing when they're in the hospital, what are they asking for?
Oh, they ask for the vaccine.
Right.
And then I say to them, of course, you realize that this drip we're giving you is not natural. Because I have people come in who say, oh, you know, I'm all about natural and I'm into nature and I take my ginger. I say, fine. That I would prefer you to make your own natural antibodies by showing your immune system what the virus looks like than for you to come to the hospital and us to treat you, because, you know, prevention is more important than cure, to give you fake vaccines that are effective. But we certainly want you to make your own natural ones, if natural is your thing.
Any closing thoughts before we go?
There's no question that vaccinations in general have the safest, cheapest, most effective tool that we have to keep people healthy in the history of medicine and the history of the world. It allows us to travel, to get an education. The COVID-19 vaccines that we have available in the U.S., they're safe, they're effective, they help us prevent disease, and they help us to keep our neighbor safe and our grandparents healthy.
Dr. Treasure, thank you. And I hope that this has been helpful for those who are hesitant and will go out and get some more information. Thank you so much. We'll be back in a few.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.